Matt and Alex
on Triple J.
Potty! Thanks very much for joining us on what was a Tuesday podcast, and you can hear how rested our voices were after having a Monday off as part of a public holiday in some parts of Australia. Hopefully you didn't miss us too badly with a Monday podcast going missing. But yeah. Tough stuff, bit of Orlando chat, given the terrible atrocity which some person committed.
Yeah, you'll hear a lot from us about that. You know, we probably let our feelings of the matter seep through our comments.
Well,
sometimes
that's the thing. Your feelings of the matter is anything we can do to stop 50 people being killed in one go with automatic weapons.
Yeah, semi-automatic weapons. Another person here has texted in though. Said, well done, Triple J, for only putting on an unqualified American who wants to tout anti-gun waffle. The fact is, guns don't kill people. People who hate, people who are uneducated, terrorists, criminals, and people with mental health issues kill people.
Yeah, but you can't ban people who hate. You know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah. And in fact, what guns do is allow people who hate to kill much easier.
They've Kinder Surprise eggs banned, right? Because they could choke children, all right?
Yeah.
Getting onto shoes with bottles of liquid over stuff. Someone did something with a bottle of liquid on a plane.
Mm-hmm.
Box cutters banned
on
a plane. We banned them.
Because it's funny.
No one's used box cutters to kill anymore.
People say guns don't kill people, that people kill people. And I mean, using this example here, you can't kill someone with hate. You can't hate someone to death.
Sure.
You know, so what you can do, though, is shoot them with a gun.
So you're not going to go in with a, you know, a kitchen knife and stab 50 people to death and another 50 people into injury.
No, there's definitely some inadequacies when it comes to the gun laws of the United States. If you love your guns,
yeah,
then
we had a chat to
fine.
A, you'll hear, we'll have a chat to a guy who's, you know, likes his shooting and fishing in Australia. And we asked him, you know, he told us a few of the steps he had to go through, which were a lot to be able to get a license for stuff in Australia. And we asked him, is that too much? And he's like, no, probably not. Sorry to ruin what's coming up for you. But yeah, it was interesting to hear in Australia, like if you want to get, as he did, a particular firearm to shoot something, you're able to, given you can prove it's for legitimate purposes.
Kate from Adelaide says, glossing over the fact that this was an attack on the queer community only furthers to silence and marginalise us. I don't believe that we were glossing over it.
No, mentioning it because it's horrible for the people involved who, you know, face still to this day discrimination to be targeted by ISIS who hate many people, the gay community as one of them, which is just a shocker as well. Apologies if it seemed like we were glossing over.
Yeah, we certainly don't think had any intentions of doing that.
But it's interesting reading these texts. We should do like a Triple J open, a Matt and Alex open day for the people who listen to the podcast to come in and like look at the text line and the various things we get,
and
check out the offices, go and see our favorite breakfast spots after the show. If you're interested in that, please hit us up on Facey or whatever.
Because you've got all those texts like that.
And then I doubt they listen to our podcast.
And then you've got this one. I'm a white Lionel Richie and can do all night long like a boss.
A great community we have. So thank you for downloading the podcast, and we'll see you at the next Matt and Alex Open Day. Bye. Kick things off with the Avalanches, Frankie Sinatra and Husky.
Frankie Sinatra.
It's one of those songs that, you know how you could have in your head, it just sort of bleeds in, but other times it just comes out of nowhere and you're walking along, then suddenly you start singing, off his rocker, off his rocker.
It's I mean, people are warming to it and very much cooling to it.
So there it is, Husky there with History's Door. I hope you're well. Hope you're not feeling too husky after a long weekend. Went all right myself. Always puts a damper on it, though, yeah, when your team loses on the last day of a long weekend.
Oh, yeah.
Collingwood getting pumped. So that wasn't great to
in, man.
Finish off. But many people as well had work, which they need to go to, including Eddie, who was in Queensland, not celebrating the long weekend. Eddie, how are you today?
Oh, yeah, good. Thanks, mate.
That's good. You didn't have a long weekend yesterday, but you decided to anyway.
Yeah. Woke up a bit late and decided, can't be stuff going into work today.
So when you say that, do you have one of these things where you could call a doona day and just stay at home, you know, rest up, that sort of thing? Or did you just turn your phone off? How'd you approach it, Eddie?
I just looked at it and just said, nah.
Yeah, but you had to call up someone and let them know that you wouldn't be in.
Eventually I did. They said, I couldn't make it today. I just couldn't make it.
I don't know how this is so easy for you. Where do you work?
What do you do?
Okay, and so you didn't have to call anyone.
So say at about 12 o'clock, I couldn't make it today. And the boss is like, I know, you're not here. We've had to do it all ourselves.
No, I was the boss for the day, so, I just made the call.
Oh,
the perks of being the boss.
Yep.
And what what job were you working on? Is it a house or was it a building
a house,
or what?
A house, yeah. New house.
And you just told the owner, the supplies haven't come in this morning, so we won't be able to drop by.
Yeah, no, I just told the big boss that I just couldn't be bothered going in today. So.
All right, Eddie.
Well, you're the type of worker that Australia needs, Eddie.
Take a leaf out of Eddie's books from now on. Matt from Carrum Downs, you had an interesting weekend.
Yeah, it was a little bit strange. How you going, boys?
Good, thanks, Matt. So you rekindled with your ex.
Yeah, it was an odd one, really. I've been sort of texting her on and off for the last sort of month, maybe. But we're together for 4.5 years, and then things sort of went south. And, like I said, we went to other people, and we started talking again the last month. And then, I met her, saw her at a nightclub about a week and a half ago. And then went out to tea with her over the weekend, and ooh. I don't know if it was smart or stupid, but
right. So you've caught up to try and figure out whether this is a good thing or whether you should have just left it as things were. How do you feel about it?
Triple J love advice, I suppose. I don't know, mate. I do not know. It's a bit of an odd feeling, to be honest.
Has there been much messaging back and forth since you rekindled things?
Not quite a whole lot, but there's been the message. I had fun.
Well, you're together for 4 years. Obviously, there's something there that you connect and you click on a particular level. What was the reason that you eventually decided to part ways?
We're both sort of miserable in a way, I guess. It was actually a pretty easy break. Like, it wasn't, any big major fight or anything like that.
Yeah.
But it was kind of funny, yeah.
Okay. And how long have you been separated for?
Just on 10 months, I think it is.
Okay.
Right. Well, I guess if it's just that sort of going down, you sort of got out, you've realised that potentially you two get along better than before, and those differences that did cause you to and could be learned to live with in the future and something that might have gone through. So,
or you could just remember exactly why you broke up very quickly. So,
Tough situ, Matt.
We wish you all the best, Matt from Cameron Downs.
Cheers, boys.
And Australia will be very interested to see how things go. So make sure you keep in touch with us, my friend.
No worries. Thanks, Matt.
And on this Tuesday morning, Matt O'Kine, it's a great pleasure to welcome someone to the radio who just released their third album just over a week ago now, good friend of Triple J, Lady Hawk. G'day, Pip.
Hey, how's it going?
Great, thank you. Where do we find you?
In London.
We've just celebrated the Queen's birthday. Does she know?
Oh, mardi gras. I don't know if she knows, actually. I think it might have been celebrated last weekend here, actually.
Okay. Fair enough.
We heard you just got back from a gig. How was it?
It wasn't actually a gig. It was a live promo thing where I was playing, and it was great.
Was it a shopping centre appearance?
like a mall. That might have even been better.
Yeah, they're always a bit funny, those things. I think I saw your little show of yours a few weeks ago in Australia. You were playing a bit off the upcoming album, got to preview a couple of the tracks. But a lot of people going to those things, they sort of sit there and sort of review it in their mind with their arms folded. Did anyone have a bit of a dance at the one today?
It was a good little crowd. Yeah, people were kind. Actually, a lot of lovely people today, actually. It was just a full-on one.
I would have been very surprised if people weren't dancing, Pip, because the album, it gets you moving.
I made the mistake of listening to it while trying to go to sleep last night, Pip.
What the hell are you thinking?
It was a disaster.
Why would you do that?
Well, I hope you had good dreams.
The amount of ARP in there alone, the arpeggios. crazy stuff with Asante. It's a really, really movie, upbeat album. It is called Wild Things. And looking back, I mean, your last one was called Anxiety. This one, Wild Things, does that basically, those two phrases alone, do they sum up the difference in your state of mind between the last one and this one?
Yeah, I mean, God, I way to wear my heart on my sleeve. I sort of, yeah, I don't really hide the way I'm feeling when I'm making music. So I was definitely a ball of nerves doing my second record, and I was in a much happier space with Wild Things.
For sure. Have you grown into or grown to know Wild Things? Was this always the Pip Brown that we know, or you sort of had to become unreserved or anything to become the Wild Thing that you are releasing albums entitled that?
I always had a bit of a wild vibe to me, and I think I had to tame it a little bit before I made this record. Wild Things is a massive reflection for me, like on the last 10 years of my life, really, and all the madness.
For sure. I had my first window look into like a touring festival this year. It was quite remarkable seeing, you know, it's such a party environment where, you know, you've got an ice bucket with all of your favourite food and drink around, and you're playing a show and lots of nice and friendly people there who are very talented and up for a chat as well. Then you've got to go somewhere the next place and play another show. It's literally your 9-to-5 job in a way. But it's got this such temptation side of things to party and have a blowout every night and be wild and stuff. How do you balance, you know, playing all these shows and needing to be in a good state for performance, but with these other things dragging you the opposite direction?
I never did balance it. I think I've always been the sort of person that's all or nothing. And so I was always all. I was just terrible. And it was great. I've got so many awesome memories. But I had to stop it completely for me to actually get to a place now where I feel good playing shows, because I used to sometimes play shows and not remember it afterwards.
Oh, wow.
I'd feel kind of confused sometimes on stage, and I definitely feel like I'm in a better headspace now to be able to actually be engaging with the audience and maybe make eye contact for once.
Definitely.
Well, let's hear a track from your third album right now. It's called Let It Roll. Can you tell us about this track?
I guess I wanted it to be like a newborn soul. I just wanted to let it roll like a newborn soul. It's one of the lyrics. And starting with a clean slate and just letting everything wash over you, that's sort of what that song's about.
Awesome. Definitely. Well, let's have a listen to it right now on Triple J for your Tuesday morning. It's Lady Hawk with Let It Roll. It's off her third album, Wild Things. We'll be back to find out more about how this album came into existence, because I heard that there was another one floating under the surface, and I want to ask a few questions about that. You are on Triple J with Matt and Alex. This is Let It Roll. Good morning.
On Triple J, that is Let It Roll by Lady Hawk, one of the tracks from her brand new album, Wild Things. It just came out over a week ago, and we're lucky enough to be chatting to Lady Hawk, aka Pip Brown, on the phone from London right now. Hello again, Pip.
Hello.
Thank you so much for having a chat to us again. Really like listening to that song, as well as your description of the newborn soul, where, you know, it is tough to, if you had made mistakes in the past, it's tough to get that clean slate there without, you know, lying in bed at night thinking of, I don't know, embarrassing things you've done in the past or something like
exactly.
that, or regret mistakes you've made or anything. Was there any bit of advice that you could give to the Triple J listening audience, but also myself, to let these things go?
I think one thing I've just learned is that you really can't hang on to the past. You can wake up with a horrible hangover and then furiously check your text messages to see who you've texted. But I honestly, I'm like, just leave everything in the past, because you can destroy yourself dwelling on all that stuff.
Well, you chatted to Kingsmill earlier, just a few weeks ago, about the new album, Wild Things, that you've just released, and how you had a darker album almost completed and you decided to throw it away and start again. First question, did that album have a name? And secondly, what was the tipping point, the exact moment where you realised, nah, I've got to start again?
The record never had a name. I'd say it was around 8 demos. Basically, they were pretty done, but they were really dark, and everyone I worked with was great. It was just all coming from me. And I do remember one particular moment. I had my mum and stepdad visiting me from New Zealand, and I was staying at my house, and I was like, oh, I'll play you some demos I've been working on. And my mum is my biggest fan. She loves everything I've ever done, including when I was in, you know, like really heavy rock band. She used to love that, you know. I knew if she looked unhappy. It was a bad sign.
Oh, no.
So I started playing the songs, and she just kind of looked at me really sadly, and she was like, "This is dark. Like, are you okay?" You know, she felt pain for me, and that made me go, "Oh, God." My mum could see, like, I need to get rid of this. So that's, that's why that's gone.
Oh, what a moment. Did you then play her the new songs, and she looked, you know, a bit happier and had a dance? When did she hear those?
Yeah. Literally, as soon as I would finish a demo of one of the new songs of Wild Things, I would send it straight through to my mum, and she was so happy. Yeah, she thought it was great, and she knew that I was in a happier place. So,
oh, sensational. Well, I guess there is a place in the world for these sort of dark tunes, and I was hearing that you're pretty happy with them. Like, there's not bad songs at all. Is there a place for a Pip Brown different project, you know, with a different name?
Oh, yeah.
We're happy to workshop some with you now, Pip.
I'm not binning them. They're there, so I might use them one day. They might even, maybe just reworking them could be a good idea, but definitely not quite ready to do that yet, but sure. Soon maybe.
And you said in an interview recently that you've put a bit more thought into the live shows. How is that coming along? You've been rehearsing more?
Well, yeah, that was the intent. And
it's a bit more difficult said than done.
Yeah, well, like, I was supposed to rehearse heaps, and then just other stuff happened. It felt so stupid me trying to explain it on the phone. I have put a little bit more, I mean, a lot more effort actually into the presentation of the live show, the presentation of my band, just like just simple things that I was too sort of, I was too much of a ball of anxiety to even start with that stuff back then, and now I really want to have a handle on everything. I want to know exactly what it's looking like on stage. I want to make sure I'm engaging the audience. I think that's one of my big things, because I used to really hate that, really struggle with all the people looking at me.
Yeah, fair enough. Yeah. You do realise that's part of the job description, though.
Yeah, I didn't get that memo, so I'm learning, though. I'm getting better.
Well, I got to see the live show a little while ago, and it is looking great, Pip. We cannot wait to see Lady Hawk again. And you've got a couple of shows in Australia as well through July, Thursday the 14th at the Zoo in Brisbane, Friday the 15th at the Oxford Art Factory in Sydney, and backing it up on the 16th of July at Howler in Melbourne. It should be incredible. We're going to go out with another song from the album here, Pip, Sweet Fascination, which both Matt and I found as one of our favourite tracks from the album. I felt it had a bit of an LCD Sound System vibe. What sort of influences were on Wild Things, Lady Hawk's third album?
Oh gosh, it was sort of, it's funny. I didn't do, like, usually when I'm making a record, I really listen to a lot of stuff for inspiration, but I didn't really do that this time around. I feel like a bit of Tom Tom Club might have come through and Talking Heads.
Oh, awesome. Well, let's have a listen to it right now.
Pip, all the best. Thank you so much for chatting to us. And, hopefully we'll catch you in July when you're in Australia.
Thank you.
Matt and Alex are with you this morning. Thanks again to Stacey Gagoulis for filling in for us yesterday over a long weekend in many parts of the country. Really tough as well for himself, particularly with this terrible news coming out of the States of the worst mass shooting in their history. So I had a listen to him yesterday, doing very well with Naz covering that particular one. We were just chatting about it this morning, Matt, seeing this come through. It's so polarizing when it comes out, and seeing Facebook comments from people going, it's not the gun's fault that it's being used by insane people.
Did you have people on your Facebook that were
not my personal one,
right to anyone owning arms?
Yeah, but you see comments on whether it's, you know, a Washington Post one or something going, you know, let's not take away the rights of gun owners for these particular ones. But then you see some other things, like, as did you see the photo of the two kids, one of them holding a Kinder Surprise egg, the other one holding an assault rifle, saying, one of these things is banned in America because it might hurt children. It's not the assault rifle.
Well, funnily enough, the US has had a ban on toys embedded in chocolate since 1938. So that's lasted for 40, however long that is, I can't even do the math, 70 years or something, the knowledge that a small toy might be dangerous to children.
Yeah.
Yet the thought of an automatic assault weapon is completely legal.
Well, President Obama, it was about 10 days ago when I was in a public forum. It looked like a bit of a Q&A set up on PBS.
Very good video, actually.
And a gentleman got up and said to him, why are the rights of, you know, law-abiding citizens, you know, taken away with guns? Why do you and the Democrats want to do this when other things, you know, everyday things aren't taken in the same situation, why don't you, you know, make the offenders liable for what they do rather than infringing on our particular rights?
Mm.
And Obama, first of all, said, we don't want to confiscate people's guns. We want to treat it like everything else. And mentioned being in a situation where, that day that brought up this issue.
I just came from a meeting today in the Situation Room in which I've got people who we know have been on ISIL websites, living here in the United States, U.S. citizens, and we're allowed to put them on the no-fly list when it comes to airlines. But because of the National Rifle Association, I cannot prohibit those people from buying a gun.
And it's even more prophetic when the person responsible for this most recent shooting was looked at by the FBI.
It's a very strange situation that, that the US find themselves in with a group of people who are so adamant about their so-called rights, which is, it's just strange, isn't it? You wonder why they can't comprehend how dangerous these things are.
Feel free to let us know your thoughts. 0439757555. You were touched over the weekend by the terrible events which happened.
We're back from a long weekend. We had a bit of a break, thanks to the majority of Australia celebrating the Queen's birthday.
Congratulations again to her, rocking up another milestone, doing very nicely, but pretty rough weekend for America, for the LGBT community as well. After this shooting, which killed, I think, 49, they're saying now, people, another, 50 or so injured quite seriously in a nightclub incident in the States. And it just sort of brings into light, once again, the gun debate in America with President Obama, something he's been trying to do for a while. It's being blocked by the NRA and plenty of other people who believe that the constitutional rights give them the right to carry these sort of weapons. But the statistics are pretty damning in America. I'm going to talk to someone now who is a sporting shooter in Australia to see his opinion. Rob from Mackay, how are you?
G'day, guys. Good, thanks.
That's good. And what sort of shooting do you do, Rob?
All sorts of disciplines, rifle and handgun.
Okay.
Pistol shooting, yep.
And do you own guns?
Yes, I certainly do.
Cool. And did you have to get some sort of license to own those guns?
Yeah, quite a arduous process to obtain a firearm in Australia through police checks, safety courses, and that's just the start for a rifle. When you want to get a handgun, that's a completely another story, and there's like a extended 6-month waiting period. Lots of qualification to go through before you can even apply.
Do you think that's a good thing? Do you think it's too much?
No, I don't think it's too much. I think it it definitely puts someone who's out to participate in the sport and obtain their tool for the sport, a genuine sort of procedure to go through, and it proves they're out to participate, not out to obtain for other means.
What about in America? What do you feel about their laws?
The Americans probably could do something with the process in obtaining a firearm. I'm not entirely familiar with their system, but it seems that they may be a little bit lenient. I'm not sure.
Now, I mentioned earlier that it was an automatic weapon, but it wasn't. That's my bad. It was a semi-automatic rifle. Have you shot a weapon like that before?
I have, yeah. The semi-automatic firearm I shot was in New Zealand. In Australia, they are rarer than hen's teeth. It's unless you're a primary producer or someone who is a professional pest controller, those type of firearms are unobtainable to a standard firearm owner.
What do you find What do you find appealing about firing guns, Rob?
It's just like trying to shoot hoops, you know, like going for that 3-pointer swish is pretty exhilarating. It's pretty thrilling. going a straight set in tennis is pretty thrilling, and shooting a really good score with a rifle at a match is also, quite self-rewarding. It's, it has just like any other sport.
How do you feel when you see people using the tools of that sport, though, in situations such as we saw in America?
It's disappointing. It's quite saddening to see someone abuse the tools of the sport and bring it into repute. And, you know, it's not fair to the rest of us what that does to the sport and to firearm owners, licensed firearm owners that obey the laws and, you know, and use their firearms as intended for sporting and general hunting purposes.
Righto, Rob. Well, awesome. Thanks so much for chatting to us. Good to get your side of things in this one. Clearly something needs to be done. The 372 mass shootings in 2015, in which four or more people were killed or injured in a particular single incident. So we'll see how it plays out. We're actually going to be chatting as well later on too. Hack reporter Shalala Medora as well to see what the fallout will be. Matt and Alex are with you.
I'm very pleased to welcome to our show a friend of ours who grew up in and around Brisbane as well. Please welcome to the show, Megan Washington.
Hello. Hi.
Hey, Megan Washington. How are you going?
I'm pretty good. I'm on my way to you. I'm being a chopper in.
You didn't get here in time, did you, Megan?
It's early.
What did you do? What were you sleeping in? What
you
happened?
Hit the double snooze.
No, it's look. It really isn't like a big deal. I just, you know, I struggle in the mornings, and it's fine. Like I called the emergency chopper. I called the Sony Pony, and it's on its way.
Gave Bronwyn a little telephone call. Got the chopper on the way in. That'll be excellent because you're going to be joining us very soon to chat about Oxjam, which is quite an interesting little initiative going out, which is both combining a couple of things we love at Triple J: live music and doing good things. What can you tell us about Oxjam?
Well, basically, it's a month-long, music festival that's raising money to help Oxfam fight poverty around the world. And I'm an ambassador for it this year, and it's really a cool. I think it's a cool thing.
Very nice. Yeah. So, I mean, you're encouraging people to host their own shows, right?
Yeah. So there's the option for people to like put on their own, like performances or shows, but then there's also a bunch of, gigs that actually Oxjam are organising if, you know, people don't want to organise their own, which they should, because
sure.
It would be fun.
So like right. Having a little mini music festival at your own place and sell tickets that can go to Oxfam, which is excellent.
Exactly.
We chatted to Luca Brasi recently. They played a lounge room gig from one of their fans. I assume you could do something similar to that. Have you ever done one of those kind of really low-key gigs recently?
I've actually done some, like, you know, proper gigs that just really felt like that.
Like, they were supposed to have 200 people in. They felt like a lounge room.
Exactly. That's probably the closest I've come to that sort of thing.
All right. Well, if you're interested in hosting your own little concert, or if you always wanted to host a music festival in your backyard or something like that, this is the perfect opportunity. And we'd love you to give us a text right now, 0439757555. If you've thought of doing that, but you don't really know the best places to start, Megan Washington will be able to help you out. Matt and I will do our best to give you some tips as well.
Well, we had a texter in let us know that they put on a little music festival in their own house when their parents went away for the weekend.
Yeah.
Could have collected a couple of bucks at the door and given it all to Oxfam.
It's beautiful stuff. Right. Right, Megan, how far away do you reckon you are from the Triple J studio?
Oh, just not long.
Okay, we're going to play your song here as well, and hopefully by the end of it you'll be joining us in the studio. We can give some people some tips. Matt and Alex with you this morning on this day where we're letting you know about something quite cool that you can do at your own place, have a killer time, but as well as that, raise a bit of money for Oxfam. It's called Oxjam, and you have a bit of a jam out whilst you're raising money
and
for Oxfam.
An official ambassador of Oxjam has literally just walked in.
Megan Washington, you made it!
We didn't think you would, to
I
be completely
did.
Honest.
Neither did I. Neither did I.
But you did. So thank you very much for dropping by,
thank
getting
you very
up
much
early.
People loving your song Holy Moses before, which is great.
Oh, thanks, dudes.
And you've played that live many times. What would be the smallest gig? We often talk about biggest gigs you've played. What about smallest when we're chatting about these little gigs in houses that you can do as part of Oxjam?
Yeah, as I said before on the phone, I would say that probably the smallest gig I've done is a gig where I expected many more people. and I reckon that was probably in Tasmania.
Yeah, right. Okay. Little Tassie gig.
I want to say, yeah.
Apple Isle.
Yeah.
Are you much of a hoster of parties? Do you ever put on your own?
Look, I feel like I got scared somewhere in grade six and I just never have had a party since. I really literally have never had a party.
You've never had a party?
I've never thrown my own.
Wait. But I've seen you at parties.
Yeah.
Like, I know that you go to parties.
I go to parties, but that's because I don't have the pressure of expecting the people at my house, you know.
Sure. All right. Well, let's talk to someone who has. Hannah from Bendigo. You've hosted a gig. What were the circumstances of this?
Hey, so Deez Nuts were meant to play a show in Bendigo a few years ago, and the day before, they actually cancelled it. They weren't going to come. So I lived with five musos at the time, and they decided it would be a good idea to bring them all of the other bands to my house.
All the support bands.
Yeah, all of the support bands. So I couldn't tell you. We had a few house shows, but I couldn't tell you who actually played. it was a good time. We had a few drinks. And, yeah, we charged like $5 entry and it ended up paying our rent for about a month.
Oh, incredible.
Oh, too good.
Excellent.
Yeah,
so you're very well equipped to take part in Oxjam, in which a bit of that money can go towards Oxfam as well.
Yeah, absolutely. My house is a bit smaller now, but look, sure.
Why not? Just jamming in the kitchen.
Yeah, was it in the lounge room, or did you have like a nice deck to do at the backyard?
Yeah, no, it was fully in our lounge room. It was really full on. There were people like smoking in our house and drinking, and
it was five bucks a head, and it was in your lounge room, and you had enough people in there to pay your rent for a month.
Yeah, it was pretty big.
Sure. All right, sounds good there, Hannah. Now, Megan, we want to encourage people to get on board. And
absolutely.
Some people who are interested in hosting their little gig at their place and raising a bit of money for Oxfam have got in touch. Tamika from Lamb Island is one of them. How are you today, Tamika?
I'm great, thanks. How are you?
Good, thanks. And you reckon you've got the right pad for an Oxjam gig?
Yeah, well, it's not my house, but
Whose house is it, Tamika? Whose house is it?
We run a little market out here, and we had the first one last year. And last year we had some of our local kids just randomly jump up on stage and start singing, and they were awesome. So, I would definitely love to do something like that again and support Oxfam.
Lamb Island sounds like an excellent venue. Triple J, I think it was Double J back in the day, hosted a midnight oil gig on Goat Island in Sydney Harbour. Maybe Lamb Island is the next big one. Have you called Peter Garrett? Maybe see if he's interested to rekindle that flame.
Well, we won't say no. I'm sure he'd have an audience out here.
Or, I mean, you could get, say, Lamb of God to play at Lamb Island. Oh. That could work.
I could only dream about that.
Yeah,
very good.
Who would be top
all right,
of the
Megan,
week?
You've played many gigs. What would Tamika need for an artist, to encourage an artist like yourself to come and play a Lamb Island gig? What's something that's quite tempting for you at a show?
Well, I mean, I don't know what you're asking
ice
me.
Ice buckets? Like if you say you've got the ice there ready for your drinks or something? Is it a stage with an amphitheatre? What do you need?
I don't know.
What have you already enjoyed?
I'm a sucker for a venue in a lovely, you know, locale.
Old hall or something like that.
Yeah, I do.
We've got beautiful sea views and a nice ferry trip out.
You know what can entice any artist? I know this for a fact. Just some food. A lot of us are desperate for meals. So if you've got some sweet Lamb Island cheese or something, mate, it's a winner.
All right,
well, the local shop is Indonesian. We could maybe throw in some satay for you.
Oh, that sounds great.
Now you're talking, Tamika.
All right, well, check out the Oxfam website. You'll be able to participate in Oxjam, Tamika. And please, if the gig's going ahead on Lamb Island, let us know.
All right, thanks, guys.
Thanks very much, Tamika.
Thanks, Tamika.
See ya.
All right, Megan, you want to hang around with us? We've got some news headlines up next. Okay, great. Well, every Friday you can join a little gig that happens in the Triple J studio. We call it like a version. An artist comes in, does an original, does a cover. It's happening this week with Olympia. And right now let's get a bit of a taste of what can happen. This is what happened when Kimbra was in the studio. She mashed up a couple of tracks, 2 weeks by Grizzly Bear, Head Over Heels as well.
By Tears for Fears.
Ooh. So in sync we are.
Bit of jinx going on there.
It was brilliant. Here it is for you on a Tuesday morning on Triple J.
And Cronulla back rower Wade Graham is facing a nervous wait after being penalised for a high tackle on Jonathan Thurston in last night's 13-10 win over North Queensland. Graham's been named to replace the injured Boyd Cordner in New South Wales team for game two of the State of Origin series.
Thank you very much, Ruby Jones.
Megan, Ruby.
Hello.
Nice to meet you.
We're talking about putting on your own gigs to raise money for Oxfam.
It's called oxjam.org.au. If you want to put on a gig at your place and raise a bit of money for Oxfam, they'll be able to help you out. Megan Washington, ambassador, but has not hosted a house party for many years.
Forever.
Ah.
What about you, Ruby? Have you ever put on a gig at your house?
Yeah, I used to put on a few when I was a lot younger before I realised that I couldn't sing. No one told me for a little while.
What, you perform polite. At your own parties? Are you kidding me?
What, are you Jono Harrison, our producer?
That's awesome. Bit of karaoke.
But then it became clear that I really shouldn't do that anymore.
Well, ticket sales started dwindling.
Well, I guess you don't have to put on, you know, a full high-quality music gig, do you, with, like, you know, stacked speakers to the ceiling or anything? Do you,
no,
Megan?
It can be like an acoustic, you know, I mean, if you have a piano in your house, for example, and you have a few, you know, like budding singer-songwriters, maybe you could invite some of your friends around and you could all pay money and you could listen to your other friends
or
sing music.
If it's not a lounge room, you can totally do it at a venue as well, right?
Right.
So you can go, you can approach venues and say, hey, I'm thinking about raising money for Oxfam.
Right. So, like, any place that you know, you could just ask them, right?
What about the Interpilly Hotel?
If you are having a gig at your house, you know, a few people coming around, what if people go, I love going to see some live music at like festivals. Does your place have a Goslemi stand? What do you do? You contact your local Goslemi dealer to try and tip that up?
I mean, I guess so, or like maybe you like pre-order some Goslemi online.
Probably best to get onto that.
So many issues to think about.
Well, it's quite easy to do. Mr. Tom York from Radiohead, just recently a video emerged of him playing at his neighbour's house just on a little acoustic guitar.
What, just drop by?
Yeah, the neighbour's place. There's a little mini acoustic gig there. Is he playing Reckoner there by the sounds of things?
A great text has come in on 0439757555. Says, boys, we were jamming, rehearsing in the late 90s in our band Spider McGlurk, and a policeman came about the noise. He asked us to play two songs, said we sounded pretty good, and then said, that's enough. So a gig for one.
That's very nice indeed.
That's literally the music police. I love that.
But the great thing is, if, you know, you're quite young, your parents are out for the weekend, perfect time to put on Ox Jam. They come back like, what has happened to the house? Like, guys, we're raising money for charity.
Exactly.
And then the parents feel bad for busting and ruining the party.
Yeah. It's ideal. It really is an ideal situation.
Neighbours won't complain if they know that it's for charity.
Well, more info at oxjam.org.au. Megan Washington, thank you so much for dropping in.
Thank you so much for having me.
The other good thing is that if you can't put on one at the old house, there's some headline shows at Melbourne, Sydney and Brisbane you can get along to as well and help Oxfam raise plenty of money exactly for people in need.
And you can also just donate to Oxfam at any time.
Oh, why not? Hopefully you're waking up okay this morning. It's very rough. Particularly, you know, having fun out on the weekend and seeing news coming in of a terrible shooting happening in Orlando in Florida, America. Their worst mass shooting in history, and it's a pretty long history, unfortunately, of mass shootings. So that makes it all the more terrible to tell us exactly what happened and the fallout politically, I guess, in the election campaign in America. We do have Shalala Medora joining us from Triple J's Hack Program. Hey, Shalala.
Good morning.
Intense situation happening over the weekend.
Yeah, absolutely. And look, we do know now sort of the order of how things unfolded and there's a very clear timeline of how it all happened. So what we know is that at 2 a.m. Sunday local time in Florida, Afghan-American man Omar Mateen walked into Pulse Nightclub, which is about 120 miles from where he lives in the town in Florida where he lives. He walked in with an assault rifle, a handgun and several rounds of ammunition. He opened fire. as it so happened, there was an off-duty police officer at the nightclub, and the off-duty police officer tried to stop the attack. That's when Omar Mateen went into a bathroom and he took hostages while he was in the bathroom. While he was in the bathroom, he made several phone calls to police in which he pledged allegiance to Islamic State and made a number of radical comments. He also made reference at the time when he was calling the police to having explosive vests and explosives around the building, which prompted police to really expedite their sort of rescue operation because there were still a number of people stuck in the nightclub. So what they did was they used a SWAT vehicle to try and blow a hole in the side of the wall where the bathroom was. The first attempt at that was not successful. The second attempt at that was successful and a number of hostages escaped. Omar Mateen himself also tried to leave at that time, tried to flee the building, but he was caught in a shootout and eventually killed. And that unfolded probably about 3 or 4 hours after the hostage situation itself started.
Yeah. Now, you mentioned that he made a call to the police when he was in the bathroom and pledged an allegiance to Islamic State. Had there been any connection between him and Islamic State before this moment?
Yeah, look, we know that he had been interviewed twice by the FBI over sort of links with radicalization and with radical groups. So we know that he had been on the radar of the FBI, no doubt. Why those avenues were not pursued will be a matter of deep interest in the US now. There'll be a lot of conversations with law enforcement about how not only this man could still be out in the public, but how he could legally purchase a handgun, which he did the week following the attack. So very, very soon, close to the lead up of the attack and after both of those interviews, he purchased a handgun legally.
Well, both sides of politics, I think it's just sort of they're breaking away from each other in different directions, getting more intense on their particular arguments. This is what Barack Obama had to say following the incident.
What is clear is that he was a person filled with hatred. Over the coming days, we'll uncover why and how this happened, and we will go wherever the facts lead us.
Presumptive Republican nominee Donald Trump went the other direction and had this to say about Barack Obama.
We're led by a man that either is not tough, not smart, or he's got something else in mind. And the something else in mind, you know, people can't believe it. People cannot be, they cannot believe that President Obama is acting the way he acts and can't even mention the words radical Islamic terrorism.
So it seems like this is sort of fracturing the politicians in the US, Shalala.
Yeah, pretty clear sort of, I guess, indications there from would-be President Trump that Barack Obama has some sort of sympathy for radical Islam or for radicalized people in the US.
Yeah,
it's a really big
dangerous
call, and that's sort of what his whole like the extended interview was sort of dancing around that issue without ever actually saying it outright. But that was the link there, that, you know, President Obama is soft on terrorism for a reason that we don't quite understand. So, you know, Donald Trump is really painting himself as the alternative in terms of get tough on terrorism. He reiterated several times his pre-election pledge to ban visits or immigration from Muslims outside of the US. So he's sticking by that particular scenario. Hillary Clinton, on the other hand, who is the presumptive Democratic nominee, is following on from her predecessor, Barack Obama, and saying that there really needs to be a more examination of tighter gun control in the US. This was a really big politically a messy thing for Barack Obama to get involved with. There's a massive gun lobby in the US, which I know that you guys talked about earlier. And so it's quite dangerous political territory because it does prompt a lot of backlash.
For sure. Well, Shalala, stick with us. We'd love to hear from you. I think particularly if you're American, I mean, it's great for us in Australia to look at it, but it's a whole different kettle of fish with gun laws in America. We'd love to hear your opinions on it. If you're from America, family there, 0439757555 is our text number. Love you to get in touch to talk through. It was a pretty horrible situation over the weekends. Here's Hermitude now. This is Zukio. Shalala, in Australia, what have our own politicians had to say?
Yeah, look, they've sort of carried on pushing some of the laws that they had in place. You may remember that we've had quite a few changes to Australia's anti-terror laws over the last, say, 4 or 5 years. Two things that are still on the cards that haven't been passed yet, but the government has said today they will continue with, is about pre-detention and post-detention. So essentially, the government wants to lower the age of preventative detention, that is, if police and law enforcement officials suspect that a terror attack is imminent, they can detain someone before the act happens. They're trying to lower that age from 16 to 14. That's in the wake of the Parramatta shootings, where you may remember 15-year-old Farhad Jabbar carried out those attacks. Under current law, he wouldn't be able to be subject to these preventative detention orders because he's not over 16. So that's one element. The other element is after someone has been convicted and gone to jail, it's post-sentencing detention. So if law enforcement officials believe they still hold radicalised views, that they can be detained even after their jail sentence has finished.
You mentioned earlier that Donald Trump is pushing an agenda towards banning Muslims from immigrating to the US. That doesn't really address the fact, though, that this particular shooter was born and raised in the US, wasn't he?
Yeah, and that's what a lot of Donald Trump's critics have been saying, is that, you know, sure, it's all well and good to say we're not going to allow people arriving in the US, but what about the radicalised elements that you have in the country?
Yeah, for sure. Well, let's get an opinion from someone who is originally from the US. Kira is in St Kilda currently. Where are you from originally, Kira?
Hey, guys. I'm originally from Chicago.
Okay, and we were talking about the gun laws in the United States just earlier. How do you feel about them, about guns in general, really?
You know, I'm really anti, I think, especially after living here. I've only been here for about 2 years now, and it just makes so much more sense seeing how, you know, something massive happened and that it's actually been actioned and not continuing with more guns. And, you know, especially coming from Chicago, when just by the end of March in Chicago alone, there's already 141 people killed. And even just over our Memorial Day weekend, there was about 6 people killed and 42 injured from gunfire. So it just seems to be nonstop. And that's in one city alone. And then this happens. And then just so many shootings in the past that have happened. And it just feels like nothing is coming out of it. And it's just so sad. Like, it just seems, how does something not happen and rectify these situations?
Did you ever own a gun, or did your friends openly own them?
I definitely have some friends that openly own them. I never don't plan on it either.
Yeah. How do you then change people's sort of blanket statement of, it's in the Constitution, I'm allowed to have it, therefore it shouldn't be changed?
You know, in my opinion, it's such an outdated thing. You know, the Constitution was just so outdated, and that was at a time when it made sense to own a gun. But now people use that argument, and I think it's just invalidated these days. It's one of those things that people see it black or white, it seems. And, you know, to me, it seems so obvious that you wouldn't have a gun, but then you put something on Facebook and make a comment, and people that you never would imagine all of a sudden come back with all these arguments, and it's just, everybody's on there, complete one side or the other, and just such strong opinions on it, too.
Yeah, I saw this tweet that's been retweeted 85,000 times about it from a guy called Dan Hodges. He says, in retrospect, Sandy Hook, where 26 and 7-year-olds were murdered by a guy with a gun, marked the end of the US gun control debate. Once America decided killing children was bearable, it was over. So it's going to be tough to change should people go that way. Should Donald Trump become president, it'll be interesting to see what happens on his side of politics. But we appreciate your input there, Kira.
Yeah, no worries. Thanks, guys. Hopefully something will be done one of these days. You just wonder what has to happen at this point to actually make something happen, a change. Yeah.
And Shalala Medora, thank you very much for chatting to us as well.
You're welcome.
More this evening from 5:30 on Hack.
Indeed.
Thanks very much.
Thanks, Shalala.
Hey, thank you.
Tomorrow on the show, we're going to be chatting to Jeff Goldblum and Liam Hemsworth about Independence Day 2.
Jeff Goldblum, legend of the game.
Liam, so hot right now. Liam.
Breakfast with Matt and Alex on Triple J.